one.
Do we have to do this? Do we have to do a podcast?
Yeah, you started the record button.
Did I hit record already?
You did. I think I see it. It's a big red dot.
Oh, it is. Ah!
You know what that means. Hello. Welcome, everybody, to Considering Some Things. I'm the co-host, Keith Cox. That guy giggling insanely is...
I'm Mark Storer. Nice to see you all. Wait, nice to hear you. No, they hear us. Nice to be talking at you all.
Mark is on his game tonight, baby.
I'm on my game.
He's on his game.
You know why? Because it's been the Santa Ana-ies out here. Do you guys get those up where you are?
You know, we absolutely do. As a matter of fact, it's been... getting kind of windy a little bit.
Yeah.
And, I know. So I loved it because it's been kind of cool the last few days here. I don't know about there, but
yes, cool here too.
Cool down a little bit, but I heard we're next week it's going to start getting hot again for at least a week. Jumping into the 80s for us anyway, and that's hot for us.
That means it'll probably be 90s here.
Yeah, exactly. I was all excited about my air conditioning, and now that's being delayed. I'm very sad because I really wanted to use it for the 80s anyway. Now I'm a little depressed. Now I don't want to talk.
Do you want to go back to the episode in which we talk about leaving California with that?
Well, no, I don't mind staying as long as I have air conditioning. I'm working on air conditioning.
You know, believe it or not, Sue, my wife, the lovely and gracious Mrs. Storer, said that even when we move to Washington, one of the absolutes that must haves is we're going to have air conditioning.
And you don't have air conditioning either, am I correct? Because Camarillo didn't really do a lot of,
Oh, for God's sake. You know what? I've lived here off and on, but I came back in 2001, and I've lived here ever since 2001. I lived here from 1995 to 1996, early 95, late 96. And you know what? You need air conditioning.
You do.
Yeah.
It's funny because certain places. Now, if you go to Paso Robles up there, they are building new houses. They come with air. It's just coming with air conditioning.
You go to
Bakersfield. They're coming with air conditioning. It just blew me away that, like, you know, houses in San Fernando Valley, because we're raised out there. My house didn't have air conditioning or anything like that. It was weird. Mm-hmm. That was still a luxury, and it should have been a must.
Yeah.
And even here in Santa Maria, now, granted, if you look at our average temperature, which is about 65 degrees, which we average, mm-hmm. do you really need air conditioning? And the answer is yes, because sometimes it gets 90.
Yeah, it does.
We'll have 2 weeks of it. And, of course, I live in a two-story where it's always hot in my room. It's like... You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, my room, baby. I'm talking about a little of both, but it's hot.
I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it's not getting warmer. It probably is getting warmer, but I also think we are bigger pansies and I'm older and I don't want to put up with it.
Well, we're going to have to do a global warming thing and talk about it because I'm not going to sit there and deny it's, you know.
No, absolutely not.
It's a cyclic thing, this whole Earth. We had an ice age, you know. Well, we have that one. So whatever, I'm not going to debate it. Hey, by the way, Mark, what you drinking?
Oh, you know, one of my favorite wineries is a place other than Nabu, of course. Is a place called Stolpman Winery.
Oh, yes. We were just out there last this weekend.
Yes, sir. And we had, we're members of their club. It's the only winery of which I'm a member. And we picked up last weekend, we picked up our shipment. And
our friends were out there and they picked up their shipment.
See? So, what are their names?
You're going to tell me all about it's them. The DeFazzi's, Sherry and Vito DeFazzi.
Oh, I know. Vito Bag of Donuts. Guido Bag of Donuts.
Guido Bag of Donuts. Yeah, they were out there.
They're fantastic.
When did you pick up your wine?
We went on Saturday.
Saturday or Sunday? Oh, Sunday. Never mind.
Well, you know who we met there was Scott Wolf.
Oh, okay.
The Scott Wolf who's been on the show, of course. And
I feel like I need to join Stolpman because all my friends and the peer pressure of joining Stolpman.
You could do a lot worse, I'll tell you. So we bought heavy into a wine called Uni. Now, this is my favorite white wine. This is a blend of 70% Roussanne and 30% Chardonnay.
Holy moly.
It's incredible. As Keith knows, I'm a white wine and red wine. I like it all, but I do like white wine. And this is my favorite so far that I've had it.
And what are the notes? Talk to me a little bit.
It's one of the smoother wines I've had. There's actually a truly velvet mouthfeel to it. Lingering notes of peach and a little bit of citrus around the edges, but not a lot. And then there's just this kind of even keeled vanilla, kind of lemon, kind of, you know, just a
Oh my god. So that's you're digging it then, buddy.
God, that is a good beverage.
And what year is it, by the way?
2017 is this one. I'm sorry. The 2018 is this one.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it's relatively newish. Back, you know, in the days when things were good.
Well, I am drinking, and I think I've already told you, but since we're going in this, I am drinking a 2009 Syrah. This is from a small little boutique winery called Shoestring.
Yeah, we've talked about Shoestring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I fell in love with their. They've just got the bold Rhones. I mean, it's just wonderful. And they sit on their wines. So, again, this is a 2009. I also have their 2008. So they kind of let them age a little bit. They're aged wines. And let me tell you something. This is one of the best Syrahs I've ever had.
It's interesting when you say, because saying that, that is a bold statement coming out of the San Ynez Valley, coming out of Santa Barbara County, because there are a lot of great Syrahs.
There really are. Don't get me wrong, because, again, I can talk about Lucas Llewellyn all day long, because also phenomenal stuff coming out of them. And their Cabernet Franc is to die for. But this Syrah is so, the complexity of it is just, wow. I mean, it's smoky, herbaceous. It's got the, you know, the tannins are pretty, very firm. It's definitely got a little bit of pepper to it. Just this plummy, inky, oh my God. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just a little violet notes and a little bit of leather. It's just fantastic. It's really good. I can drink this all day.
I am so far down this rabbit hole right now because you lost me at firm and plums. So I'm. I'm just kind of sitting here going, firm plums. Firm plums. Deep thoughts by Mark Storer.
Mark Storer. I'm going to write something very interesting. Firm plums. That is all.
My that's in-depth analysis of the Santa Barbara County wine country.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love what the Central Coast is doing though. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. And
the wines are superior to pretty much every place in California, in my opinion. And that is all it is. And because I am, well, I'm not native here, but I've lived here. And I really believe the Central Coast of California produces the best wines in the United States. That's my opinion.
And brother, I'm right with you. And I've had enough Napas to kind of know that Napa wines, you know, don't get me wrong, they're great. All right, good. But they're proud and they know they're great. Whereas it's like the Central Coast is still like seems like they're up and coming and they are just producing such amazing things. You go to Paso, certain areas. I mean, again, and I'm a red wine nut. I love those bold, you know.
I
would tell anybody who makes a really bold wine, I said, look, if this wine tastes like a graveyard, I'm going to love it. You know, I mean it. If it's just that earthy, you know, dark, you know, mushroomy kind of, and just this darky with the tobacco. I mean, I love that stuff, and especially when you eat a steak with it. Oh my God. So that's been my thing.
Yeah. Back a couple of years ago, I had this idea and I started playing around with it, sending texts out to my brothers and to a couple of friends, maybe even sent one or two to you. And I did this thing where I would take a bottle of wine, I would buy it and drink it, and then I would take a picture of myself drinking it and I would make a facial expression. And the facial expression would indicate, you know, is this good wine? Is this great wine? Is it subtle? Is it, you know, I try to be as nuanced as possible with my facial expressions. And I was telling my godson about this. And my godson is young Zach is now going to Hillsdale College, the great Hillsdale College in Michigan. And he is the pride of Hillsdale College. And he was hilarious. I sat there and I said, I don't know. I just think it's fun and clever. And he goes, dude, that's a total business plan. I go, what are you talking about? And Zach goes, You're going to call it Wines at Face Value. And you're gonna
That's brilliant.
Is that brilliant? Wines at face value. And you're gonna put out, you know, these texts or perhaps an email in which you look at wines and you'll do two things. The first will be the facial expression and the bottle of wine itself, the price of the wine. You'll do all the details of the wine and then you'll write it up.
Hey, real quick, do you have your phone with you?
I do. What did you just send me?
Well, you look and explain it. Instant messenger. Instant messenger.
Instant messenger. Instant. All right. There's a wine at face value.
See, you're describing it. Like, right when you said that, I took a picture of me drinking wine, and there you go.
It looks like a graveyard.
And yeah. Oh, yes, it is. I have no bones to pick.
By the time you're listening to this, this story will be over. But as I watch this, it is right now. The bottom of the third inning, the Tampa Bay Rays are up over the Los Angeles Dodgers 1-0.
No just way. No yeah. way.
In the World Series, you know. Go ahead, say it. Just go ahead and say it.
I'm checking my pockets and I can't find one fuck to give. I'm sorry. I know I don't cuss on this, but that was just funny.
That's the FCC. Anyway, that's hilarious. You're checking your pockets? Is that what you said?
Can't find one flying F at all in there. I've been checking around everywhere. Let me look at my backyard to see if I'm harvesting. Nope.
Nothing.
All my flux are out. They're gone. Nothing.
All right. You can't say it twice.
Oops. Sorry. I really effed up on that. Sorry about that.
We are brought to you, as always, by Nabu Wines. Nabu15 is the code. NabuWines.com is the site. Nabu, Napa, Malibu, wines that are great, brilliant, lovely. Great varietals, great blends. Some of the blends that Greg Barnett, Jeff Bailey are making are fantastic. Worth having. You need to try some Nabu wines. NabuWines.com. If you are in the Southern California area, Los Angeles County, Ventura County, possibly even Orange County, Greg goes as far south, I know, as Long Beach and such. He does free local delivery. You also have a great outdoor wine tasting. And of course, in lovely Southern California, where it is right now currently, I mean, the evenings are actually quite chilly. I'm wearing a sweatshirt, but it was 81 degrees today. You can go and taste wine. Have a great time. Please, NabuWines.com.
That sounds awesome. There's also a great group for any musicians out there called 805 Musician Network. It is a Facebook page designed only for musicians. No one else can get in. If you're a promoter, can't get in. If you're a venue owner, can't get in. If you're a comedian, still can't get in. But if you're a musician, the 805 Musician Network is the place to be. It is musicians helping musicians. So if you live on the Central Coast, within the 805, and you're trying to find information on great venues to play, this is the place to be. If you're looking for a project, this is the place to be. If you're selling equipment or buying equipment, this is the place to be. Lots of discussion, including seminars in how to improve your sound and how to market your group or band or whatever. It's a fantastic place to be. And I'll tell you something, the conversation lately has been hot, hot, hot. So if you're a musician, you want some guidance, 805 Musician Network, that's musicians helping musicians.
I love that. I love that musicians help musicians. You know why? Because no one else will.
No one else will. No, no, no. And we got to help each other. That's the bottom line. I believe that thoroughly. So,
we came here today to discuss some rather interesting topics. Now, I'm going to start by saying this. I, back in college, and right before college, right before my junior and senior year, I got a hold of a motorcycle. I rode a motorcycle around, but I never felt particularly comfortable on it. I wasn't that good at it, and it really kind of sealed the deal for me. I wasn't prepared, and I decided against motorcycle riding. But my friend Keith is a motorcycle kind of guy, and he rides some of the most beautiful pieces of art. They are artwork. These things are Indian motorcycles, American made, beautiful pieces of finely crafted metal and engine and combustion. it's just such a, I mean, I walk out every time I'm at his house, I walk out to the garage just to look at it. I don't envy it. I don't want to ride it. I just like to look at it. It's an amazing thing.
Oh man, thank you. See, that's you know, and I love all motorcycles. I really, really, really do, and I have a respect for them. I was looking at the new BMW 1600s. That's their bagger, and what just a work of art in terms of just engineering.
Is it really?
Oh my god, 268 horsepower. It's just a go, baby. No, not 200. Excuse me, 168 horsepower. Excuse me.
Still, but for a little bike, that's
still for it's just amazing. But it's got all the bells and whistles, and it just is an amazing bagger for what you get. But I'm an American motorcycle kind of guy. And of course, Harleys were always like, oh my God, Harley. But
would you own a Harley now? Would you buy one?
No, you absolutely would not. No,
you stay with Indian always. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they're building, and I'm not trying to, this is going to be controversial, but Harley is still Harley. They haven't done anything hardly different. And as a matter of fact, they just announced just recently they got a new CEO because the old one was really trying to. I think the old CEO is trying to do the right things, which is trying to appeal to the millennials and the younger riders who aren't riding as much. So they were trying to get smaller bikes going, smaller, more affordable bikes, which is, I think, the exact right direction you need to go to kind of seduce people to get to riding. And they were just starting to do it, but they're hemorrhaging money left and right. That's primarily because the fact of the matter is, you know, the Japanese bikes are still just substantially cheaper and superior in build quality. And then Polaris revived Indian, and they're making superior bikes as well. Mm. And they're doing it with their Scouts and a few other things. And
so it is Polaris who is building Indians.
Polaris has had bought the rights, correct. So, I mean, the Indian has always had this tumultuous thing. They were the first American motorcycle, and when I say that, I mean manufacturer. Because go back to the Orient, there's one called the Orient, I think, or that was even before that, but they were a boutique at the time. But the first manufactured motorcycle was Indian Motorcycle, and that was 1901. Mm. And if you looked at them, they looked like bicycles with little engines. You know, that's kind of what they look like. They had pedals and everything like that.
Which have made a return, by the way.
They're coming back, right. We're seeing a lot of electric bikes and things like that where people are, so they are kind of coming back. And see, that goes back to demand of motorcycles and everything like that.
I agree.
So, in fact, Harley came out with an electric motorcycle, which is fascinating, but, you know, they're $30,000-$40,000. I'm like,
good gosh.
Millennials can't afford that. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So
the Indian, the Harley is not known for speed. Is the Indian, there's a great movie with Anthony Hopkins called The World's Fastest Indian.
Yeah.
But is it, your bike doesn't speak to me as a speed demon. That's not the purpose.
It's a heavyweight cruiser. They're making the faster bikes, and they even have a bagger, quote unquote bagger, which is, you know, 122 horsepower, or whatever, which is, wow, pretty darn powerful for a motorcycle, because my motorcycle is probably 75 horsepower. Okay. And the Harley baggers are about the same thing. It's 50 to 70 horsepower, depends. So, they're not, I mean, they're fast, but they're not made for speed. They're made for touring and relaxing and enjoying the scenes. If you want something uber super fast, you buy a Hayabusa or something like that. Those Japanese bikes are, you know, 200 plus mile per hour bikes. And that was thrilling when I was younger, but that's just called I'm going to die very fast.
And you know, at least quickly.
I'm not going to feel it when I do.
You will not feel it.
You won't catch me doing 200 miles per hour on a bike. So that's just not going to happen. But they're still, those type of bikes are all over the place. And the thing is, they're reasonably inexpensive.
Reasonably.
Yeah. You get whatever, one of those top bikes or whatever, and they're, you know, $13,000. Whereas a Harley, you know, if you get their top of the line cruiser, $40,000.
Wow.
I mean, that's dramatic. And then when you look at the performance, the Japanese bike for a fraction of the price will run circles around it.
Sure.
Well, so we buy Harleys and Indias really for the, you know, it's the Americana, right? And it's the, you know, I ride a Harley kind of thing. And there's a certain subset of people who Harley is it. And I fell into that Harley for a long, long time. But, you know, you deal with some of the dealers and you're like, a long story, but they were all full of themselves and everything like that. And when Indian came out, I was so thrilled because I love that. 1901, that was the first American motorcycle. You know, now they've been reinvented a few times, and it's not the original Indian that was built in Springfield, Massachusetts. That's where they were first built. That's why we have the Springfield motorcycle. But anyway, so they've been, you know, they went out of business in 1953. Harley almost did less than 10 years later. Like
I was going to say several times they almost went out of business. Almost,
well, yeah, well, exactly. It's another reason everybody forgets about that. And the fact of the matter is if they weren't bought by AMF, which is a bowling ball company, whatever, but the AMF years, but that saved Harley from actually going down. Yeah. And good. So a lot of people would say, well, Harley never went out of business. And I guess true. They got bailed up by AMF. Harley then wanted to get out of the AMF because AMF was just building crappy stuff. So they bought themselves out in the 80s. And then they begged President Reagan, you know, the Japanese bikes are kicking our butt, man. So we instilled tariffs on the Japanese bikes so that Harleys could compete.
Right. Interesting.
So they taxed the crap out of Harley or out of, you know, the Japanese bikes, but not enough. And the Harleys are still people were buying the Japanese bikes in droves because, again, the reliability. My first motorcycle was a 1976 Honda 750. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, is that the one when we were in our early 20s, right? You were dating down in the valley,
Yeah. And that was a great bike, and I beat the hell out. I paid $400 for that motorcycle, $400, and that was, you know, whatever, and I rode the hell out of it, and I didn't do anything. I never changed the oil. I never did anything, and I beat the hell out of it, and it just ran, and I guarantee you couldn't do that with a Harley. Just couldn't. I mean, they leaked all over everything, and you can't beat the hell out of them. They beat the hell out of you, and then they break if you looked at them funny. I mean, that's just it. Very, very high-maintenance motorcycles, right?
Sort of American car.
Yeah. But we bought it because, you know, it was that tough guy thing. You know, it's like owning muscle cars, although a Harley was far from a muscle car. But it was the Americana of it all. And that's why everybody wanted to own a Harley, you know, thanks to the Wild Ones. And, you know, then the Hells Angels where it had that mystique. And the Hells Angels only rode Harleys, that kind of thing, which is really interesting because they had Honcho of the Hells Angels end up saying, I don't know why we stayed with these pieces of crap, you know, because they were slow the other. He ended up becoming a spokesman for Victory Motorcycles.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah. So, but he got paid a lot of money to do it.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned Victory. So one of my favorite rock bands is a band called Marillion. And one of the reasons I like them, particularly with the new singer and, but we call him the new singer. It's been in the band now nearly 30 years.
Yeah,
He's still the new singer. But
exactly. That's the same with Alice in Chains. They've had this new singer guy who's been there for like 15 years now.
But he's the new guy.
You're not Lane Staley, and he's a great singer. It's a bummer when you have to.
You get replaced. But Steve Hogarth writes beautiful lyrics. He's a bit of a poet, and he's got a great song in which there's a lyric that says there was a magical purple in the exhaust of his Triumph motorbike and the warmth of oil and metal and the thrill of the hard corner holding tight. I think to myself, you know, there's poetry in the ride, isn't there? I know there's poetry in your rides on that Indian going those back roads up on the Central Coast.
Absolutely.
That just must be poetic. It just must be.
Dad, I call them. It's really interesting because there's different types of riding and this, that, and the other. And, you know, every motorcycle enthusiast will have their brand. And I'm groovy with that. I do have my brand, but quite frankly, and I mean this sincerely, I do respect all motorcycles. They're all kind of cool, all fun. I've ridden a few. They're all great. I respect Harleys, even though I'll bash on them a lot. I still respect them because of where they came from and this, that, and the other. But Triumphs were great. My uncle. Triumph, man, he had a Triumph chopper, if you can believe
that. Oh my gosh, you know?
He took an old Triumph and turned it into a chopper, and it looked kind of like because the same thing, you couldn't afford a Harley, they were expensive even back then. So you get the Triumph and you chop it, and that's what he would do. But you know, riding is I call motorcycle riding, when I go out for a ride, I call it a ridescape. that's my thing. And the reason being is because, you know, you can go take a ride on Highway 1. We all know that one. And you could be in your car riding, and it's beautiful. But there's something one-dimensional about that. Whereas when you're on a motorcycle, you're getting a 3D experience of that whole thing, of the ocean, of the mountains next to you, and everything is 3D. You look around, there's no roofs or anything that's, you know, obscuring your vision. You're seeing everything, and you're surrounded in it. You are now in it. You are in that. And it's hard to explain until you ride a motorcycle. And you're just surrounded by Mother Nature, and it's just the coolest thing in the world. And there's only one thing cooler, and it's funny, some purists will disagree with me, but I love the fact that my motorcycle now has music. I can play my music, and now I've got this ridescape with my favorite music, and I'm just it's the most sublime thing for me. It's zen. It really is. And
you still do it. You still, this is something that you do pretty frequently, right?
Well, you know, when I started playing music, I got it now. I mean, it's dropped off because the music, every weekend I had a gig and I'm getting out gigging. So all of a sudden, so when I first got into the motorcycles and all that stuff, and I had my Indian, I had a 2000 Indian Chief, and I got into a club. It wasn't a club because it was really a owner's group called, you know, the Iron Indian Riders. It was an association. I had to be careful saying club because then we get in the, it wasn't a club. It was an association.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We were the Iron Indian Riders Association. It's all Indians and things like that. But we would organize these fun rides and go up. We'd travel up to, the Sequoias. We would travel to the Redwoods and ride up there basically and, you know, sponsor a ride. And you spend the weekend up riding the Sequoias. It's just, wow.
There is nothing better. The Sequoia National Park is one of my favorite places.
God. And being on a motorcycle is just, oh my God. I mean, you see those big trees and all that. I mean, it's stunning. You're riding up these hills. You know, we take Kings Canyon and you're down there in that valley. And then all of a sudden you start climbing that mountain. And it's like 80 degrees, and all of a sudden you'll turn a corner and it's not freezing, but it's cold and it's raining, because you're going so hot. And you'll cut a corner and you'll see a big bear running, scared off. And then all of a sudden you get almost the very top and there's a cool little antiques coffee shop there. And you're like, you know, this is cool. Pull over and grab some coffee. And, you know, and just being on the bike is there's such a wonder about it that
freedom, right?
And freedom. It's like flying. It reminds me of flying in a lot of ways, you know, that just feeling of freedom, and you're surrounded by just nothing, and it's really cool and everything. And it's really hard to explain. And until you ride a lot, you get it. And that's why there's so many motorcyclists, although I hear there's not as many. The millennials don't do it as much. They're too afraid, or there's just so many people, motorcycles will kill you and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, okay, that's just what
it's fairly evident that they're afraid of dying because they're willing to, never mind.
I got to go there. But you're also missing out, in my opinion. Yeah, I agree. They're more dangerous than a car. They're absolutely, sure. Of course. Let's do the math there. I mean, it's obvious. There's no protection on a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. If someone hits you, there's a very good chance you're going to get hurt or die. So, there's life is not a guarantee, in my opinion.
Right, and you take risks.
Or as the old, what was that? Oh my God, the movie with, I can't remember the name of it. He's one who said, not everybody, you know, we're all going to die, but not everybody lives, you know, statement. We're all going to die, but not everybody lives. And, you know, and that to me sums up why I ride a motorcycle, because life's short. We're going to die. It's a guaranteed. I want to live as much as I can. And me, motorcycles, really, I feel like I'm on a different plane when I ride. And that's kind of the truth. I mean, there's certain things that give me that rush. Motorcycles, you know, performing live on stage when I'm playing music, that's definitely a rush. But the motorcycle thing is definitely a rush, and I'll always love it. So I do worry, like, there's going to be a time. I'm 55. I'm getting to that age, and I'm not there yet. But there's going to be a time when riding a motorcycle is a really stupid idea. You know, you know, it is things when you crash a motorcycle. I've crashed my bike before. I don't know if you remember that, but way back when, you know, and yeah, it hurts to send the other, but you're young, and I was young enough and I shake it off. But you know, when you get 55, 60 and you crash, you don't heal as quick.
No,
you know, things break easier. And when they do break, you don't heal as well. And you know, that's the things you got to start thinking about. And I admit it, there's going to be a time when I just say, you know, it's now. And I might reinvent it. I might get a convertible, or, you know, Polaris is making a thing called the Slingshot, which is really cool looking to me. And maybe I'll get that. And it's like this.
What is
car.
That?
It's like a 3-wheeled. So if you remember, my wife used to have something called
the Spider.
It's called the Spider. So that was a 3-wheeled motorcycle. So you ride on it, on top of it. It's got the handlebars. And so, but it's still 3-wheeled, but it was very motorcycle-y. Well, Polaris had invented this thing called a Slingshot, 3-wheeled as well, a little bigger, but you sit inside of it. It has 2 passengers and you sit inside of it like a roadster, and it's got a steering wheel. So it's very much like a roadster. You can't really even call it a motorcycle, but you're really low to the ground. So, and you know, it's open air. So like a dune buggy or something like that. So like a dune buggy, but really low and made for the streets and everything like that. And I like it because you still feel like you're in a motorcycle with it. And you get that rush of the wind and everything like that. But yet it's stable. You know, you can't accidentally, when you stop at a light and you're, you know, you put your feet down and there's an oil slick, drop your bike, and things like that, which happens when you're older and things like that. My bike weighs 850 pounds.
Oh my
I've never, and I'm going to knock on wood here, because I've never dropped my bike ever. But if I did, it'd be really sad, but it happens. And it's easier to do as you get older and things like that, because they
Well, that's what happened to me, you know. My friend Roger Niebolt, a good friend of mine, and I should bring Roger on the show. He's a very interesting guy. He was a motorcycle guy for many years. Now he has stopped, and primarily for the reasons that you've stipulated here. Mm-hmm. And Roger rode across the country, across the United States, on his Gullwing.
Nice.
Or what do you call that?
Goldwing. Yeah.
Honda Goldwing.
Yeah, they're great. Great. That's like the first touring bike.
Yeah, it was a touring bike. And he wound up, in fact, you know, that was right after college, and he and another friend, Andy, and they rode across the country together. Roger ended up staying in the Midwest. He lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for a year, and just kind of challenged himself to live a different life. And he really enjoyed it. Roger's very good with motors, mechanics. He's done a lot. He helped Zach. Zach's my godson, the one who said wines at face value. He helped Zach build a 65 or 66 Mustang. They rebuilt that. And that was Zach's car during high school. And it was beautiful.
Okay. Remind you, what was my first car?
It was a Mustang. It was 1965, 66. Right?
66.
Yeah, that was a beautiful red Mustang.
It was kind of beat up in the front. It was a hot rod.
It was a modified
hot rod from the beginning. And it was, so the front end was kind of ragged because they tore off the front bumper and all that stuff, which I think
I remember that car very well. Yeah. You know, but Roger rode, and he had a nice big bike. I forget what kind it was. And he let me ride it.
He said it was a Goldwing.
No, this was later. Many years later. Just not 2 years, maybe 10 years back, and I was riding it. I was going maybe 3 or 4 miles an hour as I was turning it around, making essentially what amounts to a U-turn.
Yep.
And I laid that thing right down. And,
the most common time to lay down your bike is low speeds.
Yeah.
Because that's when you really start feeling the weight of the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Very common.
I did that, and you know that because I hurt a little bit. I hurt myself, and I was in my 40s, early 40s. But I have to admit that kind of got me, and I was like, that hurt, and the hurt lasted for about a week, and I couldn't pick the bike up again. It was too heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy.
Yep. So
it's a way to do it. I can show you a way to do it, backing into it and everything like that, and using your legs, and you know, especially a heavy bike. Because I don't think unless you are on a Goldwing, which is 700 pound bike or whatever, or probably even more. They're probably 800 pounds. You know, you got to be,
Most exposed I'm willing to get when we were in Austria visiting with our family friends and our foreign exchange daughter, Connie's father, Reiner, took me for a ride in his Porsche Boxster. And in Austria, there are no speed limits. And that's about as freewheeling as I'm willing to get.
Yeah, and but that's fun. So, I mean, that's my thing. I'm already thinking, like, okay, if I have to ever get rid of my bike, I'm either going to buy a trike. I am intrigued with that slingshot because they just look like so – I want to test drive one, and I think I'd fall in love with it. And the nice thing is it's two passenger, so you and your wife can go. And you're driving a car. It's just really low. Yeah. So it's a low-slung car, but it's the top is open. So, and just you got that freedom of a motorcycle, and I would love that. The weird thing is, I think in California, they still make you wear a helmet, which makes no sense to me.
Sure. Well, it's California. Don't forget, this is the state that put out Thanksgiving guidelines that say you can have six people and you can only have this many family. I tell you, never mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why we have turkey funerals, right?
I'm going to have a turkey funeral. Yeah. I'm actually not going to be in the state. I need to leave the state in order to celebrate Thanksgiving.
There you go. Yeah. Who's going to not do? Look, I'm visiting my family for Thanksgiving. That's all there is to it. I'm not going to.
Period. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
Gold wings, by the way, weigh about 800 pounds.
800 pounds.
Heavy, heavy bikes. You know, my bike is about that. My bike's about 800, 850. So
You talked earlier about the intention of some bike companies to possibly go gasless, to go electric. And
Harley has done it. They're Livewire.
Livewire.
It's called the Livewire.
And it's $30,000, $40,000?
Yeah, I believe it's somewhere right around there. The Livewire doesn't weigh that much. It's you know, like 500 pounds or whatever.
Let's talk about this because this is, of course,
$30,000.
Yeah. Let's talk about this because the combustion engine is still a thing of beauty. Our state, California, the governor, who we will simply say here that we're not huge fans of, he has made a decree that all cars will be electric by the year 2035. Now, that is only 15 years away. Am I right about this? Math
15
right?
years. Well, that's when he wants it right. Correct.
What's your thought about that?
Use buy the Livewire. No, just joking. Just kidding. Everybody's coming out. That electric was where everyone's going. Well, we might as well get used to that. I think he would have been better off saying hybrid, because if you're trying to say go fully electric in 15 years, you got to realize that the requirements to pull that off statewide, because right now, you know, the biggest problem with electric cars is you get about a 300-mile radius for the really top of the
range,
line. And number two, it's not like gassing up a car where it takes you 5 minutes to gas up and you get to leave, right? These things got to charge for a while. So if you're traveling across the state, if you're going from San Diego to San Francisco, you're going to have to, you know, electrically charge at least once. And how many hours is that going to take? You're in San Diego, you get to Santa Barbara or whatever, and then you've got to charge up, and that's 4 hours or whatever it takes to charge. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
Especially in traffic.
Lot of things have to change. They're going to have to really, you know, the average electrical vehicle requires 30 kilowatt hours for 100 miles. That's you know, same amount of electricity an average American home uses each day, by the way, to run appliances.
Does it really?
Yes. Yes. So that's whatever. So the U.S. Department of Energy, as a matter of fact, found that increased electrification across all sectors of the economy is supposed to boost national consumption by about 38%.
Well, but where's the electricity come from?
Oh, you know.
I mean, come on. It's not clean.
Solar?
Bull.
So here's where the fantastic things, because now you start seeing things. Well, they're going to start putting solar paneling in roads so you can charge as you go. I know, which is like, how are you going to do that? But I thought the solar panels on top of a vehicle, you know, the roof is a solar panel. So when you're driving, that's daytime. What do you do at night? You know, but daytime, you can travel all day because you got a solar paneled vehicle right on. But as soon as the sun goes down, what are you going to do?
You can't
do it. But that's still, I mean, there's a lot of weird things with this stuff. Now, with that said, I got to be honest. I cheer for this because I love technology. And I believe that when you start putting parameters out, like you got 15 years to figure this out, you get a lot of high tech stuff. That's like, guess what? I can now make this car run, you know, 1,000 miles. I don't know. I don't see that happening. But with that said, it really puts people to the fire to keep the technology going. And let's be honest, electrical right now, cars and stuff, that's kind of where everything's going. And yeah, look, but I'm coming from a dude that loves big V8 engines. I'm a muscle car guy. Right. I want a big old Challenger 392, baby.
But it doesn't make any sense, does it? Because on some level, you're also looking at, I still say, where are you generating the electricity? It's not going to come from solar. You and I both know that. That our system isn't built for that yet, and it won't be in 15 years.
No, that's the problem, is we're talking about the cars is one thing, but now what they're missing is the infrastructure.
Right, there is no infrastructure.
You're going to have to figure that out. You're going to need charging stations, every gas station has to have a charging station.
Where do batteries come from? I mean, we know that they're dangerous. Batteries are dangerous, and they're also they pollute. Cobalt. We have to mine for cobalt to make batteries.
Absolutely, especially lithium ion. You got to understand there's 500,000 per battery, 500,000 pounds of waste that goes into that. They never talk about that. So in terms of pollution and carbon footprint, come on, let's be real about electrical cars right now. But you know what? I think everybody goes, yeah, we get it. But with that said, you know, we can also start figuring out efficiency of this. And you know, I think that's possible. I'm an optimist. I think that they can start figuring this stuff out. And I love that, you know, that's how we get to Mars, right?
Right? No, I disagree.
Let's hear your side.
I think that the market needs to make that decision. I don't want the government making that decision.
Well, I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah, I don't think that a person, a governor, a mayor, anybody. I mean, look, I'm all for good ideas, and I think they can come from anywhere, and I think they can also come from politicians, though rarely. But I think they can. But here's what happens: markets are naturally occurring things among willing groups of people.
Right.
Governments do not involve themselves well enough in markets. What governments do is coerce. What governments do is say, you must have these electric cars. So if that edict stands and the infrastructure is not there, then we're going to have an imperfect electric car.
Well, what'll happen is it'll just fail. I mean, the bottom line is this edict that he came out with saying by 2015, you know, he's going to be gone by then. Let's be honest.
That's why he's smart to do it by 2035, because he won't be around.
And what will happen is when they come up, they're going to say, you know, within 5 years, we got 5 years and it's not going to happen. They're going to say, change that. And they will. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, this is just quite frankly posturing. And we all know that. Now, again, I'm kind of a cheerleader because I think, well, hey, man, maybe we'll have some, you know, maybe we'll get our flying cars like in the future then.
But, you know, again, that's got to be driven by the market. It can't be driven by someone who has the power to say, well, if you don't do it, you're going to be punished.
But now, look at hybrid vehicles. And that's why I think it would have been smart for him to say, look, by 2015, every car has to be hybrid. To me, that makes more sense.
Where hybrid works.
Yeah, hybrid does work and everything. Yeah. I'm like, you know, the Prius is all over the place. Even though I'm embarrassed to drive one. But I got to admit, but you see hybrids of everything. My wife has a, you know, the luxury Avalon. They make those in hybrid. They make everything in a hybrid. You can get hybrid trucks now. Yep. So that to me makes more sense, and it's still saving to me. If you want to save gas, get a hybrid.
Yeah, I think hybrid is the way to go.
More efficient. But I mean, if you're going pure electrical and everything, we get it. I mean, you know, God, electricity demands fluctuate throughout the day. You got to figure, you come home, then you're going to start charging your car. That could overload. I mean, you think if everybody had an electrical car, how utilities would just panic. Comes 6 o'clock, everybody's plugging in, and bzz, right there goes the grid. Can you see that, right? And all of a sudden, every day 6 o'clock, like, don't plug in your car yet.
I think that with allowing it to fall to the market then starts to look at everything, right? That's what the market does. The market's going to go, well, we need an infrastructure, so let's build infrastructure. The governor is making a pie in the sky announcement and saying, all cars have to be electric, says nothing about what the infrastructure needs to be, says nothing about where we're going to get that power, says nothing about the mining of cobalt lithium ion batteries. Tesla is a great car. I got to drive one. A friend of mine bought one. Great, wonderful car. Delightful to drive. You have an army of Teslas out there, you're going to have a problem, because the mining of that material to make a lithium ion battery, the danger and the environmental disaster that is created, and the haves and have nots, because the people who are doing the mining ain't making it rich.
No, but I mean, it's no wonder that Tesla also started their own battery company, right?
Correct. You know, they're, the market is working that, right? Absolutely. So the market's starting to look at it and see that. That's why Elon Musk is a genius. He's nuts. Don't get me wrong. I think the guy is absolutely freaking nuts. But he is also a genius. My concern about him is that he gets a lot of his money from where? From government.
Of course. Government, by the way. California, I'm talking about 150,000 electrical vehicles in 2018. That is 8% of state car sales.
Oh my goodness.
They're investing. I mean, the state of California wants to, you know, and they're putting up all their charging, even here. I'm County Santa Barbara, and they've got the little electrical charger things and everything like that. But again, you also see a lot of hybrids from the state. And again, that's kind of a cool thing. You can't look and say, hey, you know, you won't see, any county guy driving a Jaguar, right? No Corvette.
I think we need to return to Hank Hill. Propane.
Propane and propane accessories.
Propane accessories. Well, Bobby, no one knows what butane is. It's a bastard.
Tell you what.
This is a fun thing to theorize about. It's a fun idea, but vroom, man, vroom. It's all about the engine.
Well, you know what? And I go back, I swear to God, and I'm all excited because Tesla, you know, and I'm talking about speed because, you know, you go back to that Livewire motorcycle. Yeah, and again, you know, the torque on those things. Yeah. Now, granted, when you really jump on that thing, it's going to go 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds and right. Yep. But then that's all then you can't get home. Because you just all your energy. And the same with the Tesla. I've seen them drag racing hot rods, and those Tesla S's are bad mammy jammies. They're 0 to 60. It's insane. But then again, that's it. You just sucked up, you know,
half your energy.
Quarter mile, half your energy. You do three races, you're dead. So little things like that. So that's where we need to go, you know.
Yeah, and that's it. Racing is where you develop, right? Toyota Racing Development, Ford Racing Development. That's where you learn how to build a better car. And that's the market at work, right? You learn it. You push the car to its limits and go, okay, what did we do wrong? How do we fix it? You know.
And I'm going back to where you and I come from, and we come from, gas-powered vehicles, and I think, it's going to change. But I can't help but think I just want to get like a Dodge Challenger Hellcat and just put it in my garage, and then one day I'm going to be a Rush song, Red Barchetta.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be my Red Barchetta, also known as a Red Hellcat. And it'll be illegal. Everything's electric, right? And I'm going to sneak out and drive in the country in my Hellcat, listen to the roar of my engine, because they're just listening to that whine of the supercharger and just like, baby, this is what it was back in my day. Because now everything's, an air car.
Gleaming alloy air car.
Exactly, right? And that's like, I love that song, and I'm just like, that's going to be me. It's like Rush knew that we're all going to go electric cars one day.
Neil Peart knew that.
You need a Red Barchetta. Put your Red Barchetta away now. Hang on to it, because they're going to be illegal.
Well, on that note, I mean, that's a fantastic place to end. It's a great story that Neil Peart, who, God bless him, God rest his soul, is up there jamming with Eddie Van Halen and Chris Squire.
He was a great motorcycle guy, by the way.
He truly was. Phenomenal. He rode to all the concerts. He rode throughout the states and all over the United States and down South America.
Yep.
But he, before he passed and toward the end of their touring life, he got to meet the writer of the article who that song was inspired by. It was an article in, I think it might have been in Motor Trend, but I'm not going to swear to that. It's very easy to find on Google, but I'm too lazy to find it. But the gentleman who wrote the article that inspired the song Red Barchetta, and Peart and he met up and had a Macallan together and toasted. And I thought that was a brilliant thing.
Wow.
That's a good thing.
Oh, that is kind of cool. Yeah.
You have all been listening to Considering Some Things, where we have considered and, of course, are right about everything that we consider, by the way. We should probably point that out.
Buy an Indian motorcycle. Go Indian, everybody. Everybody, buy an Indian.
Everyone needs an Indian.
Buy the Scout. If you're big, buy the Challenger. If you're in between, buy the FTR 1200.
What do you have now? What's yours?
Mine's a Chieftain. I bought the first year, which is a 2014. Okay. So that was the first year a Polaris Indian make with a 111 Thunderstroke. It's a beautiful, big, fat engine.
Oh, it's just gorgeous.
It just produces a whopping 75 horsepower, but it's just beautiful. I love my motorcycle because it's a big old bagger. It's got a windshield that I can roll up or down. It's kind of cool. It's just and of course, it's got my music. I love my bike. It's a comfortable, I can ride that thing for 300 miles without crying. It's a great thing. Everybody has different ways. Sometimes people just buy a motorcycle just to commute because, again, the gas, you know, you're doing 40 miles per gallon or whatever. You know, I mean, yeah, get a motorcycle, that kind of thing. And some people like me do it because I just love to go out and ride Highway 1. And here it is.
Thing.
I'm ready to ride. Thank you all for listening. And this was a fun episode talking about motorcycles and whatnot. If you liked what you hear, please leave us comments on our consideringsomethings.com and let us know what you thought of this episode. And
even if you hated it, you can tell us you hated it.
You can tell us. We might delete it, but go ahead and tell us you hated it.
You can hear us on Stitcher. You can hear us on Google Podcasts. You can hear us on Amazon.
Sure can.
Other
Intune, all the good stuff.
TuneIn, iTunes.
I just said Intune. You know what I mean. All those stupid podcasts. All the podcast places you can find us.
Yes, you can.
So come hang out.
Listen, as always, stay safe, be well, and let's get through this together. And thanks for considering some things with us. Keith, always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. And because of COVID, you should ride motorcycles. It does
make
sense.
See you next time.
See you later.